Welcome to the S4N Changemakers podcast, the place where we explore the innovators, some pioneers and disruptors shaping the energy transition of today and tomorrow, of course. And in this episode, we are taking a closer look at the next phase of the energy transition, scaling renewable energy at speed, integrating flexibility and moving from single asset thinking to system solutions. Our guest today is someone who operates exactly at this intersection. Jan Christopher Klotz is Chief Commercial Officer Germany at Celestra, a global renewable energy platform with a strong footprint in Europe, driving large-scale solar storage and multi-technology projects across markets. Jan, it is great to have you on our podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, Thea. Thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
So let's start. Jan, before we dive into technologies and markets, let's start with you. Looking back at your career so far as a very experienced energy leader focusing on origination, energy trading and business development in several energy companies, actually, such as E.ON, Genscape, Lichtblick, Eneco Energy Trade. This sounds so far as a planned and proper energy sector career. Was that always your plan?
I don't know if it was properly planned, but yes, in the end, I made quite a journey. Yeah, throughout my life, started in the, let's say, traditional energy sector, energy business at E.ON. Quite some time ago, moved step by step from, let's say, conventional power plants and conventional power generation to renewables. I started in my career as a trainee in E.ON, started on the gas side and the gas business, and then moved step by step to distributed energies, built up the virtual power plant at E.ON. Then transitioned step by step further to the green side of the business and spent the last 3 years before my time at Celestra at Eneco Lichtblick, where I built up and, let's say, moved forward the origination business on the market side. So I was on the buy side, buying renewable energy from wind and solar in terms of PPAs, but also tolling agreements related to let's say the new, let's say, animal, which is large scale BESS. Yeah, and the last 1.5, almost now 2 years, I'm with Celestra, an IPP originally founded in Spain over 15 years ago. Say one of the pioneers in solar. I'm responsible for the German business, for all the commercial functions, and most of my attention is with PPAs on the sales side. But nowadays, it's a lot of my time is consumed by battery energy storage on the tolling side, where we make quite some progress in the last month.
Awesome. So you evolved from the old energy economy to the new world energy transition, energy tech world.
Exactly. Sometimes as a joke, I say I move from the dark side of the force to the light side of the force. Of course, as a joke, coming from the conventional energy generation to renewable energy generation.
Best Star Wars metaphor there is, I think, especially in the energy sector. And of course, Celestra, where you are right now, has grown rapidly as well into a global renewable energy player with a, as I already mentioned, multi-technology approach. What exactly is the company doing and what makes it fundamentally different from like the classic projects you went through in your early career or your classic project developer that you used to work for?
So Celestra started as a pure project developer in solar and transitioned step by step into a IPP, independent power producer. So what our aim is not only to build projects, but also to hold those projects, to sell the energy from those projects, all the flexibility Celestra nowadays is owned by EQT, like it's the big private equity fund that is active in several, let's say, energy and renewable companies in also in Germany. So our clear goal is to decarbonize the energy system. If I compare what I did at the beginning, it was the centralized energy world was mostly dominated by single, say, generation units. Now we have to deal with the complexity of decentralized distributed energy sources and of course, flexibility. Celestra's main focus is on four business units, which is US, Spain, Italy, and Germany. And in Germany, I think this is one of the most growing markets nowadays, where we put a lot of, let's say, focus in to invest in renewable energies. And our vision, I think, also on that makes us different to a lot of other, let's say, project developers, is that we have a very strong customer focus. Our aim is always to link our projects to customers. We build the projects customized for customers and always sell the energy and when we build the project. So that is I think the main differentiator where Celestra is active.
You described now obviously what you do, and but I sometimes have the feeling that the term energy transition, or what exactly a project developer is doing in the energy transition, is often too vague for many people that are not in the energy bubble and are not really sure what it means. Do you have any practical examples of a project that is that you're currently working on that helps to change from fossils to renewables?
Yeah, first of all, I think project development in the renewable space is, so you start at the very beginning, you really start from scratch and scout for land. You find a land spot and then you look for grid connections. Then you start to build on the, let's say, work on all the permits that are needed. That's in Germany quite time consuming. And then we are already then very, very, let's say, very early in this process looking for customers. Just to give you a very concrete example, also maybe where you see the transition in the last weeks and months, we have a PV plant that is ballpark 130 megawatts in Brandenburg, where we have secured the land, where we have secured the grid, which is the most important part. Where we have gathered all the different permits that you need for actually building a renewable energy plant. And we intend to build there a PV plus battery combination. That is something that you see more and more in the industry nowadays. This is due to the fact that we have seen quite a build out of PV in Germany. And as you might know, and the audience should be aware of that as well, when the sun shines, then it's mostly shining in the same time. Yeah. So in Germany, and together with all the, say, on roof PV that we have in Germany, plus all the utility scale ground mounted solar, we have quite some peaks in energy generation in PV during the day. And that creates a very strange behavior also of the on the market. You see the rise of negative hours. You have to pay when you produce energy during the midday. And if you look into the last days of this beginning summer, you see a lot of hours that are negative on the market. And we want to change that. We want to actually bring solutions that are not, let's say, putting more solar on top. So we are building the PV in conjunction with batteries so that you can store the energy during the midday and take it out of the storage in the evening where people come home, where the, let's say, demand is high and the, let's say, sun is not shining anymore. So you see quite high prices in the evening. And so we want to help the system by actually, flattening the generation profiles and produce the energy when it's needed and not when it's there. And that's something also where customers are looking into more and more. This is something that is needed I think just putting more solar on top is something that is in the current days not needed and also not asked for by customers anymore. This demand we see rising, and we fill that with really very good projects and solutions that that we offer to our customers.
So when you spoke about the German projects, you're obviously active in other countries, as you mentioned. Could you just transfer such a project to any country in the world? Do you have an example of a different project, not only in Germany, but elsewhere? And yeah, what are the limiting local factors if you compare those projects?
Very good question. I think that you can learn a lot from projects abroad, where you can actually transfer the learnings to Germany, and that helps us at Celestra a lot. So, however, there are quite some differences also in the market, and every market is very different. In Germany, you mentioned that the regulatory requirements are quite demanding. We also take quite some time actually to build projects. And I think that is something, unfortunately, I would also wish for more sun. In Germany, you have much less sun than you have, for example, in Iberia, Spain, but also in, South America. Just to give you a very concrete example, we have built a project in the desert of Chile. This project is one of the biggest battery storages globally. It has a gigawatt hour of storage capacity. What is done there? We are actually combining that with a PV plant that is charging the battery during the day. Because in Chile, in the desert, we are talking about more than 3,000 load hours of sun compared to Germany. This is more than three times what we have compared to Germany. Solar energy during the day is not really worth a lot in Chile. So what we are doing is we're storing the energy during the day, and the customer, it's actually a project that is built for a customer, is withdrawing the energy during the night. So it's actually a night a PPA, if you can name it like that. That is, of course, very difficult in Germany with 1,000 load hours of solar. This is, but I think the mechanism behind is exactly what we need, what I just also previously described for Germany, because you see there that it is super important to actually generate the energy when it's needed. This is a very, very important landmark project from Celestra. Another one we have built, we are about to build the biggest battery system in Italy. It's the Massa Fiscalia project. This project is also this is a standalone battery project. This is not not a combination with solar. But we learn a lot there, and also becoming a very important, buyer on the procurement side of energy storages, so of the equipment globally. That helps us also on the cost side in Germany, and makes us an important, very important global player on that side.
Obviously, a local factor is the sun availability of wind and sun and so on. But in regards to regulatory frameworks, I would reckon that it was faster in Chile than perhaps in Germany to build a battery project. I don't know, it's just a guess. I don't know if you know the timeline for that. But from your point of view, what are in general the biggest challenges for such for scaling renewables today? Is it the regulatory framework I want to pinpoint to, or is it the technology itself, grid constraints, commercial models? I think we can talk for hours about that.
These are points you can speak about now for the next 2 to 3 hours. But just to be clear, also in other countries, we have quite some, stakeholder management to do. It's a bit different to Germany, but we have a dedicated team that does stakeholder management globally. For example, in Chile, it's important also to look at environmental factors. You have local communities that need to be, integrated in such a process. Coming to Germany, on the battery side, we see quite some challenges with the grid. That is extremely important where you build a battery project and to what extent it is limited by the grid. That is, on the grid side, which is almost like a permit because in the end, it's a partnership. The grid needs to be able to actually digest the energy, and the battery storage is a totally different animal than a classical generation unit, yeah, because it can, especially the speed of the ramping, it can inject. If you look at the big projects, we are looking into a 100 megawatt project at the moment in Germany, but also looked into up to 1,000 megawatt projects, and these batteries are so quick and can inject and withdraw from the grid within seconds. That is putting the grid at stress. And that might be also different to other countries. We have over 800, local distribution systems. Not all the same, yeah? So the big ones, they are much less, yeah? But the German system is very complex because there's a lot of, different actors involved that are also looking into their local grid. If you look into the, pure distribution system operators landscape. So you really need to have a close partnership with the grid, and that is a bit the challenge for us at the moment, speaking about grid limitations, to know when we actually make our investment, what grid limitations will be there for the asset. I think that is one of the biggest challenges that we are facing also as an investor. So EQT is dedicated to invest into Germany. Celestra is very eager to actually support the energy transition here, but when we actually put a investment, then we would also love to know what the returns will be. And here sometimes there are quite some unknowns. I think this is something that at the moment is still quite a challenge. This is a process that is changing at the moment. I was talking about very technical terms, but we have the introduction of flexible connection agreements, so-called FCAs, that will for sure help us actually to determine what, the limitations are. So this is on the grid side. On the regulatory side, we see quite some changes. Especially this year is a very decisive year. If you just look back last week, we had the discussion round an information session of Bundesnetzagentur talking about grid fees as part of the so-called AGNES process. This is also extremely important. But I was very happy about the meeting last week because we gained some clarity where things are heading to. I can now continue for a long time. So we have the new EEG at the horizon that will be very important for renewable energy storage. At the moment, we saw with the current government a bit of a pushback of renewables, and that is something that we of course don't like. We are very dedicated, and we believe that the system can work. Especially with utility scale energy storage. This is a cornerstone of the transition. Again, this we continue to fight for that. It's our passion.
So you still think batteries are the big change maker in the energy transition, right? So
yes.
Or yes. Did something even accelerate due to the geopolitical shocks or new technologies such as AI, the big buzzword, and not only buzzword anymore, but a productive tool in our society, change anything? For instance, data centers are very energy hungry, brought any changes to that development in regards to battery projects or in general to the energy transition?
Yes, I'm convinced that AI will make a massive change. So you have to distinguish between the data center side, as let's say the build out of data centers that are looking into AI computation, and on the other side using AI to properly optimize and let batteries work in a system optimal way. And that for sure is going to happen. The battery is just, the hardware in the end. And I believe that batteries are and will be and have to be, especially on the utilities, scale side, the decisive factor of the landscape of tomorrow, of the energy landscape of tomorrow. We, of course, geopolitical changes are not always helping, at the moment. So it's also, things like freight costs are increasing. It's not that we are looking into a continuous, for a long time, and prices for battery energy storages have declined. I cannot expect that to continue for a long time. I think we have now found a minimum price, the same price to solar panels. We even saw a rise of prices of solar panels. So this is on the energy, on the pure, scaling of battery energy storage in Germany. I am I'm convinced that this is, and especially with the use of AI, so the proper dispatch, as we say in the energy world, AI will help. And also, if you look into the combination of also smaller scale batteries, those need to work together as a big swarm. And also, there are solutions in the market that work already. Talking about data centers, maybe just quickly, the data center is, unfortunately, in Germany, we are lagging a bit behind because energy costs in Germany compared to other countries are higher. I think we need to speed that up. I think there was a venue last week in Germany to push the build out of data centers. We are not where the US is. The US, it's, every week there is a multi-billion investment in data centers. But these data centers are extremely energy hungry. And the problem of the data centers is not that even nowadays they are not lacking the ships anymore. So it is really the availability of power, the grid and the availability of power. And here I see the renewables and batteries as a, enabler for AI. So that goes hand in hand. I think we are part of the value chain, as the energy, renewable energy industry is part of the value chain of the AI build out. That's for sure.
And of course, in regards to data centers, I just read an article about the social impact that lots of people in the US actually are against the build up of data centers due to the lack of energy availability to some cities and water also. That I found very interesting. I think as well, or I'm convinced that the multi-technology approach is the right one, so that lots of solutions will lead to the common goal of a successful energy transition. Even with data centers, this just comes to my mind. I also read an article yesterday, actually, about a deep sea data centers. Yeah, they put some data centers into deep sea, so they have an automated cooling and can save energy through that as well. So I think there are lots of things technology-wise, regulatory-wise, and all the bits you talked about that can lead to some successful things.
Yes, and maybe to add here, I was listening to a podcast with Elon Musk, and he wants to bring data centers to space because he says the next evolution because of the availability of energy and also the space you have in space. Let's start on the planet first, maybe. But with this and the energy hunger of data centers and AI, that is incredible. It's exponentially growing, and we want to be part of that.
Unfortunately, we are coming to an end of our time here in our episode. But before I come to the last question, I eagerly want to ask one thing, because we mentioned that in our short intro call. And you mentioned it just before, managing stakeholders. And we briefly spoke about possible topics. And you said everybody's always just emphasizing the technology. And while talking about the energy transition, but it's the people that drive change. And this I found very inspiring and a change-making thought. It's not always AI, and it's still the people. And you said it's the bigger or the equal challenge, actually, that about social and cultural matters rather than the technical ones.
Yeah.
So how do you align these cultural and social things or different backgrounds of those people?
Yeah, maybe to explain a bit what I meant. I think when I look into my back into my career at the very beginning after the liberalization of the energy market, there were quite, let's say, I wouldn't say similar people, but kind of similar people in the energy industry. It was less, but just to give you an example, there was a trader that was actually working on the market. And as a counterpart, this person had someone in the power plant, and then you had something in the utilities called Kraftwerkseinsatzplanung. Mm-hmm. You had somebody sitting in the ops center of the big power plant, and then they were communicating one to one with each other, not directly, because there's of course, let's say, Chinese walls, but there was more or less one language people spoke, in the energy. People that worked for a long time in this industry, very detailed, often academia, people that knew every detail. And now that has changed in a speed. Also, the variety of persons that entered the game in the last years is incredible. And people sometimes tend to forget that all this needs to be working together. Yeah. So now you have the trader on the one hand, that is more or less, let's say, you have to imagine someone like from Wall Street, very much focused on financials. And then on the other side, you have the landowner, the farmer, that is actually building a power plant. And the also cultural variety and complexity that brings this new landscape is something in my mind people underestimate. If you, especially if you go into that business, you have so many people involved now in the energy transition. Yeah, from the farmer that is owning the land, from the regulator and the local municipalities, the untere Naturschutzbehörde, up to then you have the project developer. You have people on the commercial side, on in the IPP, contract drafting, lawyers. This is the and then all the technical stuff and the IT stuff, the tech stuff that goes along with that. So it is quite, as I always keep the people also on the radar. This is what I say, and also that they need to find a common ground, and also complexity of the system. We should not underestimate it. Sometimes it's hard for me. It's a simple question, but sometimes hard for me to tell my children what my job is, because it's really to explain the complexity. Also for us, it's getting more and more complex to explain the markets to, let's say, people that are not in that industry. So I think that that for me is always something that I promote in saying, even if we all speak German. We speak different languages. We have different cultural backgrounds, different, let's say, academic backgrounds. And just being aware of that is the first step to make it happen.
Awesome. And also to make change making happening. And that's obviously leads me to my last question. I ask all of our podcast guests, who's your change maker?
My change maker in life, you mean?
Or for instance, the energy world, or where else?
I wanted to. My first impulse was my kids. Yeah, but this is also on my. They are making the biggest changes in my life. But I think that I cannot name a person or a company. I think the real change makers for me are all the, let's say, dedicated, motivated people that, despite resistance coming from politics, coming from geopolitical difficulties, continue to work for the energy transition, see the impact they have, even with setbacks that we all feel, but staying there. In German, I would say am Ball bleiben. Yeah, so that is for me really also inspiring to see.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Jan, for the impactful insight of yours.
Thank you.
This episode, I think, showed that while technologies may enable the energy transition, it is ultimately people, mindsets, and perhaps also collaborations across very different worlds and cultural backgrounds and any backgrounds that will determine its success. I want to also thank our audience for listening, and I hope you will tune in to the next episode of the S4N Changemakers podcast.